Catherine McCord, welcome to The Signal.
Thank you.
I would love to begin, if you wouldn't mind, by having you read the seven facts that you list on page 97 of your book.
Facts. One, my father worked for the CIA. Two, he never divulged his secrets. Three, his secrets have informed my life. Four, his secrets that I do not know. Five, there's probably horror behind those secrets. Six, it is not possible to heal from such horror. Seven, it is only possible to go on.
I ask you to read that because it seems like, Catherine, these seven sentences are essentially the narrative skeleton of this entire book. But this kind of moment of clarity that you just read doesn't really appear until your reader is like two-thirds of the way through your story. Instead, you begin this memoir by dropping your reader kind of headfirst into a complete state of confusion. And I wonder now if you might flip back to the actual beginning of the book and read the first page of My CIA, page number 11.
Sure. What I have to tell you is that I don't know why my father, the CIA, my three trips to a healer, and the Sisters of Bon Secours' labyrinth are linked, but they all pulse in my mind with the same uncertainty. Like in the story A Wrinkle in Time that I read as a child. At the climax, there's a dais. On the dais is something the main character has to face. It throbs. If I remember right, I think it was the main character herself. Surrounding the dais are members of the main character's family, unconscious, dreaming, held together by strobes. Anyway, what I know now about each of these things is that, one, I miss my father terribly, and what has replaced him is nothing but longing and a wanting to understand the mystery behind his existence. So, because of the Freedom of Information Act, I wrote to the CIA and asked them for information about my father's work for them, what he did in Africa, Nepal, and Vietnam. Maybe to understand him, but more, I think, to find the connection between his past and my present life. Two, because of health issues, I sought a physical therapist I thought might be a healer, too. She describes herself to me as an energy worker. All I know is that she can read my mind. And when she's working on me, she sees what I see. Without knowing my ability to fly, she says to me when things start to become difficult, "Now, don't start flying." Just as I'm envisioning myself standing on Earth, heels up, milliseconds before pushing off, arms outspread. Three, I don't know any of the Sisters of Bon Secours. Their website describes the convent's mission as to help bring people to wholeness, to alleviate human suffering, and to help bring others to a deeper awareness of their own spirituality. And that the labyrinth is a symbolic pilgrimage or journey to the divine. Coincidentally, my healer's last name is Divine. My healer says she is peeling back layers. She says my body is in a state of pensiveness. Bated breath. She says she needs to drain the bad blood, blood she adds that isn't mine. And just before she says it, I'm looking down into a tunnel where a dark reddish-brown liquid flows.
Catherine McCord reading from her book, My CIA, A Memoir. Catherine, you open this book and start reading and you're completely disoriented. All of a sudden you have no idea what this book is supposed to be about or even what sort of genre we're dealing with. I mean, is this going to be a mystery? Is it going to be a work of magical realism? Is this a collection of free verse? Who is this absent father? Who is this healer character? And really, who are you, this idiosyncratic kind of narrator with this undisclosed ailment? I guess all that is to say, talk about how form and content kind of interlace here at the beginning of this story to set the tone for what's about to unfold.
Poetry is my genre first. I got my MFA in poetry, my MA in creative writing poetry. I wrote my first poem when I was 8. So I was moving towards prose when I was writing this, and it just started coming to me in bits and pieces in the way that lyric poetry does. And I had found a form called the lyric essay, where there's a combination of poetry and prose. And you don't have to give the plot. You don't have to give the background. Through the stringing of pieces becomes the narrative. So this voice just started talking to me about what was going on with me. And I just started listening to her and writing what she was saying.
You make an interesting editorial decision in this book, I mean, visually, to leave a lot of blank space on each page. I wonder what went into that layout decision and how it kind of resonates with the story or fragments of story that you're telling here.
I've always loved white space. And my poetry is the same. There's often a lot of white space. And I think that it's important in this book to give you a rest between the information that I'm giving you, to sort of sit with it. It's almost like you're reflecting a little bit as you read each piece. You can't just look at it for a literal line to go from one thing to the next. You're sort of reflecting. As I see everything in my life do that, sort of everything becomes a symbol. And so I just was following this person that was speaking to me.
Talk to me about, like, where you are in your own life with your understanding of your own father and his involvement in the CIA. I mean, is this person 100% indisputably you, or is this a fictitious character that is based on you?
No, this is me. I think when I talk about her and her voice, the reason I sort of talk about the second self, and that self, I have to give her a lot of space to create in my mind. It's me, but she speaks to me, I guess, with a different tone. And so that's why I was referring to her. So it's a memoir.
So, Catherine, the thrust of this book is about your waiting with bated breath for some information to come in the mail about who your dad was, what his work was with the CIA. This is information you never got a straight answer about from anyone in your family. So there's this sort of tension about, will you get this information? I'm not going to give anything away. But let me ask you what you do know and what you can say about, you know, what you've learned of your dad and what he was doing back then. This was the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. I don't know much. When the information finally comes, it's, you know, and I write about it in the book, but it's comical to me in that there's a lot of white space in the actual information and a lot of blacked out words. Yet it's so carefully, the envelope when it arrives, it's a big manila envelope. It's so carefully crafted and put together. It has three sections. So I guess the reality is that I'll never get the answers. And, you know, once again, I learn that my father will have to be embraced the way he was, which was aloof, very loving, but unknown, basically. You know, and whether I've come to terms with that or not, I don't know.
What an interesting legacy for your father to leave behind a daughter who is a poet. You write at one point in this book, spies can be poets, poets can be spies. What do you mean by that? Is there some common ground?
When I first got to college, I was raised in the Midwest, and after my mother had a nervous breakdown, we came back to the States, and my dad didn't want to travel without us, so they offered him a desk job in, you know, with the CIA in wherever it is, Virginia, and he declined. So we all wound up, he went back overseas for a little while, and we wound up back where, you know, my mother and father were born and went on with our lives. But I guess my understanding of anything was not worldly. I had this early entry into, you know, being born in Africa and et cetera, all these early impressions. But then I was raised pretty normally with that all in the background. And so when I first got to college, it was, believe it or not, the first time I was in a class and a professor was talking about the CIA in a very negative way. And all of a sudden, my world just blew apart. And I know that sounds ridiculous because my father was well-read. My mother was, you know, definitely geared towards art and things like that. But I never had been shown sort of an alternative. Okay. And so when that happened, I started on this journey of looking at my father and first getting really mad at him and angry for his choices, but they weren't really choices. They were just things that happened. a man with learning disabilities goes into the Army and then they recruit him for the CIA unknowingly. But he's very complex. And instead of looking at his choices in a negative way, I started throughout the book and before that seeing how much more complex he is than just somebody who joined the CIA with blinders on and left the CIA with blinders on. He was very hurt. He was very, I think, wounded most of his life.
You mentioned he joined the Army. Yes. And was recruited from there. And you mentioned he had a learning disability?
Yeah, we put all this stuff together later. He went to college for 3 weeks, dropped out. It didn't seem that he was able to handle college. So I think that while he was incredibly intelligent, they didn't know about learning disabilities then. And, you know, he had to make a living. And he wanted to see the world. So he joined the Army. And I don't think, from my understanding back then, you know, you can go to the CIA and say you want to join. But I think then it was sort of they identified you through testing. And that's the way we understand that he was recruited.
You preface this book, you dedicate a whole page to the CIA industry term blowback. First, just give us a brief definition of what that means.
Well, blowback is basically the unintended after effects of things that the CIA would do, missions, etc.
Which is obviously interesting to think about in terms of your own confused childhood and fragmentary memories about your own past.
Absolutely. My sister and I, she's only 10 months older than I am, and she was born in Africa. We live life a certain way. We communicate a certain way. We exist in the world a certain way. And I didn't understand it for the longest time, but that there is an element of danger everywhere, and that it's worldly, and that we are going through motions in many ways, but there are so many things going on that at any moment could affect us and are affecting people all over the world. It's not sort of like you have a pulse on something that you didn't realize you did have a pulse, an understanding of. And so we talk to each other as if there's danger around us. And I didn't know that shadow was hanging over us. And it always has. I mean, we were both born in Africa. We lived in Nepal. My parents' apartment was ransacked. My father was an alcoholic. He would leave and do his missions and come back. How could you not be aware, you know, and have a sense of alarm?
Catherine McCord is the author of My CIA, A Memoir. She's here with us this week on The Signal talking about her experience, trying to put her childhood to memories in perspective, a childhood spent, as she says, overseas with her family while her father was working with the CIA. And Catherine, I wonder now if you might read one of the more vivid mental pictures you have from your childhood, a scene from your book on page 25.
Absolutely. If you take all the little airports in the world, and from them you take all the ones in darkness, and from them all the ones under a light rain, and from them all the ones with a linoleum floor, and from them all the ones with a white cement lawn, and from them all the ones with a family, a father, a mother, and two little girls, the girls in dresses, holding the hands of their mother and father, outside the small airport, in the warm, wet wind, walking and looking for a nearby cab or hotel. You'll have my airport, my exact one, somewhere overseas, sometime in the mid-60s, my father in a suit, my mother wearing a small round hat, my sister and I with our long, light brown hair, sleepy but listening, aware, headed to or out of another country, headed in darkness and warmth, with witnesses to a hotel's light for the night, gold carpet, lamplight, a late dinner wheeled in, covered plates, warm bread, juice, so we can sleep under watch, so we can keep this memory, and what we'll never know about it, to ourselves, as our own, so we can grow up and borrow lives that aren't ours, my sister a professor, me a writer, my father dead, my mother on to remarry, so we can bargain for what we were given, the fascination of being loved by a man we could never possibly know, and the fascination of remembering a childhood among others we could never possibly touch, and a fascination of being born into a country we'd never be allowed to be citizens of, the records lost or disjointed or troubling if we'd try to account for them. Be happy, my sister and I tell ourselves, our father gone. Be happy, we try to, calling each other daily, reeling from our births in a clinic in an African village near an embassy long ago dismantled by angry, angry mobs. Our mother stumbling home after both our births, her own long buried, her own near normal life forgotten, her children and her husband her only witnesses to what she could no longer describe. The dead in the street and the ways of the men whose wives she befriended, whose children she would help love until they were gone. They were all gone, or dead, or had chosen to try and forget, because it had to be enough that we were born and were alive and went on.
Catherine McCord reading from her book, My CIA, A Memoir. And Catherine, it seems like, you know, this clandestine curtain that hung over everything in your childhood must necessarily leave a person feeling somehow like you're not a complete person, like you're not a totally real person. I mean, I guess that's the blowback.
Absolutely. I mean, I always say that I feel of this world, but like my feet aren't quite touching the ground all the time, or, you know, it's not as tangible to me. I'm not as sure. I'm not as clear. It does not seem as familiar to me like it should.
I wonder if writing this book has helped you along the path of getting a bit more in touch with your identity and your own substance.
I think what it did is it allowed me to look at how I parent and how, because I use the lens of the present, and so it allowed me to understand.
You have two daughters who make appearances in a lot of these entries in this memoir, perhaps with their own neuroses that you try to work through with them.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're very highly sensitive, and how could they not be? Because, you know, I mean, they were born into somebody who, a family who, with a mother who's very highly just attuned to what's going on at all times. So they both are, yeah.
You joke at one point in this book that there maybe ought to be a support group for the children of CIA agents. I wonder what you think people would talk to each other about in a group like that.
I don't know. Wouldn't that be neat?
Yeah.
To kind of see if their existence in the world is similar. That would be neat.
I venture to say that those meetings might possibly be monitored in some covert way.
Oh, absolutely. Many files on many people.
Yeah. You tell a little anecdote at one point in this book about ending up at the funeral of a teenage boy, or maybe he's a young 20-something. He's the son of a co-worker of your husband. And it really struck me, you and your husband went to this funeral, and at the wake afterwards, you give to the departed boy's parents blank journals as gifts. That really happened?
It really happened, yep.
Talk about what kind of meaning was packed into that gesture.
I had a conversation with my husband, and I said, I want to do something. What can we do? And, you know, we talked back and forth, and I think of all of the things that you could say to someone, none of it would matter. Of all the things that you could do for someone, none of it might matter. But if you could give someone a place to go to be truthful, that would just be the best gift. So we wrapped it up, and we didn't really say anything, but put it in a bag, and that was that. Gave it to them.
That really touched me. I never thought about the potential of a journal to be a gift of healing like that in a situation like that.
I don't always think, you know, I'm a teacher too, and I don't necessarily think that, you know, sort of, I don't keep a journal at all times. I don't force my students to keep journals at all times. I don't, if you're inclined to write, you're inclined to write, and every writer has a different process. But boy, when you need a place to turn, sometimes art is the best place.
Catherine McCord, it really has been fascinating talking with you, and I want to thank you for visiting us and for this book. The book is called My CIA, A Memoir, the author, Catherine McCord. Catherine, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.